It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 6:07 on a Saturday morning. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia Gardener, here to help you be more successful in your landscape, whatever you want to do. If you want a couple fewer weeds, if you couple more flowers, if you just have less work you want to do, which is what I try to do all the time, all you have to do is call me, 404-872-0750, 404-872-0750. You can ask whatever question you have on your mind. If you have an organic gardening question, if you have a method of doing something you want to share with me, and I'll tell you whether I think it has a chance of succeeding or not, then this is your chance, 404-872-0750. One of the things I think all of us try to succeed at doing is controlling mosquitoes, or at least managing mosquitoes. I don't think there's a way to eliminate them at all, but managing mosquitoes in the landscape, in your garden, outdoors, is a major task for most of us in the summertime. Because mosquitoes love Georgia, and they love Atlanta, they love suburbs, they love in-town, they love everywhere. And mosquitoes have come out in force, and will come out in force over the next week or so, because of the rain that we had the last two or three days. So we know sort of the normal things that people say. Oh, you empty all your containers of water, make sure your gutters drain. Make sure your pots, your saucers under your pots, don't have any water standing in them. Well, that's all well and good, and we try to do that. But what are some other things you can do to manage mosquito numbers? One of them, and I've become more and more convinced of this over the years, is to keep ground cover and other plants that are real low to the ground as low as possible so they dry out faster. And I'm specifically talking about English ivy. That's a plant that I have mixed feelings about. There are sometimes when I think English ivy is a perfect plant for a certain shady, sloped place that no other plant will grow. And other times, I think English ivy invades, it gets up trees, climbs trees, and does mean things that I don't like in the landscape at all. But I also am pretty convinced that English ivy simply makes a very high humidity area underneath the leaves, which is where mosquitoes like to roost. They're not dumb. Mosquitoes want a place that's convenient for them to hang out while they're up during the day looking for somebody to bite. And so they find a place that has a lot of humidity in it, and they stay there until they go out and looking for you and me to suck the blood from. So if I'm asked what to do about mosquitoes besides all the water emptying and things like that, one is to keep your ground cover low. English ivy can be mowed. It can look just as fine as it would at 12 inches high as it does at 4 inches high. So if you have an old lawnmower, get your old lawnmower out where the English ivy grows and mow it at the highest setting your mower will accept. Mine goes up to 4 inches, so I put my little levers up to the 4-inch notch and mow around the places where I have English ivy. I also have a band of English ivy behind me that was on my neighbor's property, and I've asked my neighbor if it's okay if I spray a little Roundup over there. I can't take the mower over, but I asked if I could spray Roundup, and I spray Roundup on the English ivy to control it, a little band around my property. I think any other thing, like even liriope, if you can trim or cut or somehow make the liriope so it's not quite so wet underneath it, so moist underneath it, I think that would help as well. You know, of course, that if you have any place that you can't drain, and I might mention this, that if you have a pot or a backyard water feature or something that has little nooks and crannies that just can't be drained easily to keep the mosquito larvae out of that. Another thing you can do is put the mosquito dunks, I call them. They're donut-shaped in some cases. They're little bits in a bottle in another case. But these mosquito dunks are completely organically safe, but they control mosquitoes like a charm if you get them in contact with the larvae of the mosquito. So if you have a water feature in the backyard that you can't drain completely, but it does have little places where the water is still enough for the mosquito larvae to develop, then put some mosquito dunk, one or two mosquito dunks in the water so it circulates around in your water feature, and the bacillus that's in the dunk will kill all the mosquito larvae, which is a good thing. You could even have gambusia. Gambusia are little fish. They're called mosquito fish because they love to eat mosquito larvae. So again, if you have a little pond in the backyard, you can go to pet stores and ask if they have any gambusia. And put a couple of gambusia in there. They'll just be happy as they can be to eat your mosquitoes. They sure will. Now, as far as repelling mosquitoes on your body to keep them away from you, you know, there's any number of organic weird things. People talk about, oh, if you eat garlic, it'll keep the mosquitoes away. Well, certainly, you know, Uncle Elmer, he ate garlic every day. He never got kissed, and he never had mosquitoes either. So I'm not real positive about the garlic application. Other people, I think one person wrote me 2 weeks ago now and wondered if you could put a combination of, what was it, stale beer, mouthwash, and Epsom salts. If you sprayed that in your yard, would that repel mosquitoes? No, it will not repel mosquitoes. Epsom salts, mouthwash, stale beer do not repel mosquitoes. The thing that I do, and frankly, I just don't like the feel of DEET, you know, the DEET, DEET, the common mosquito repellent. I just don't like the feel of it on my skin. And so I have alternative mosquito repellents, which are proven by science to work. You don't want to use something that doesn't work. And so the chemical picaridin, P-I-C-A-R-I-D-I-N, picaridin, is in several products. So there's a bullfrog product and a repel product, and I seem like I've seen another one somewhere. But picaridin works fine. It keeps mosquitoes away just about as well as DEET does, and it feels just like a little mist on your skin. It does not feel oily or weird at all. So I really have enjoyed using my picaridin. I have two little spray bottles of it, one in the carport as I go into my backyard, and one up in the shed as I'm working in my backyard if I need to reapply. A little squirt on my neck, a little squirt on my legs, and no more mosquitoes for that day. The other really mean thing that I do, and this is totally cruel. I guarantee this is in the cruel category. Possibly. I guess it's cruel. I have one of those electric zappers, you know, the tennis racket thing you put a battery in, and it electrocutes insects. And I will stand still in my yard and wait for the mosquitoes to be buzzing around my leg about to bite me, and I'll put my little zapper down there right close to them, and all of a sudden, and all the mosquitoes are little puffs of smoke, just like that. It's mean, I know it is. I know I won't be forgiven for doing something like that, but boy, it's fun to hear those mosquitoes fry. If you have questions, other questions about mosquito control, give me a call, 404-872-0750. Let's go to our friend, let's say down in Griffin, Georgia, our friend Nicole comes to us. Hey, Nicole, good morning.
Mr. Reeves.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. You are so funny.
Oh, sometimes. sometimes. What's going on with Nicole?
Mr. Reeves, on my way back yesterday,
yeah,
I saw a bus of watermelon. You know those kind of bus that they cut the top? They cut the top.
Yeah, that used to be the common way of carrying watermelons. Watermelons and baby chicks. Used old school buses. They'd cut them off or they'd modify the interior so they could put watermelons or chickens inside. Sure.
It was full of watermelon, yeah. And it was paint like a 1960 bus, all kind of thing. He almost got to the farmer market, probably stopped 2-3 exits underneath the overpass, but I think the bus didn't want to go anymore. If I could, I would have pushed them all the way to the farmer market.
Did it look good? The watermelons look good?
Yeah, I would, yes, because they were, they keep them cool. It was underneath the overpass, you know. And the police officer didn't say anything. As long as they have a base plate on, I think it's okay.
Yeah, as long as you have a, you know, something that makes you legal to be on the highway. I guess the police, even if you're full of watermelons, they'll let you go. Nicole, have you ever had a yellow or golden watermelon where the flesh is not red but golden?
No. Mm-mm.
That used to be, once in a while, my dad, mother would go to the farmer's market there in Forest Park, and they would find a vendor, a farmer who was growing and selling yellow meat watermelons. And to me, that is a memory of childhood that I think they were the sweetest, or at least at the time. I thought they were the sweetest thing I had ever tasted in my life.
So what else? What kind of other watermelon?
Well, of course, back then, of course, you had all seeded watermelons. You take the seeds and spit them, see who could spit the seed the furthest, or spit them on your brother and sister just to aggravate them. But now you have seedless. Of course, most watermelons now are seedless, the ones that command a high price. And that's done by a way of planting, not genetically modified, but hybrid watermelons that don't have seeds in them. And so that's how you get the seedless watermelons. You have hybrids that are planted amongst the regular watermelons. They turn up with no seeds.
How about the square watermelon?
Oh, I don't have any square ones. They have to be put into a container so they grow square, or cubic, I guess is what they call there.
Yeah, I saw that one time. It was in a glass container, so yeah, the light could...
Yeah, you can do it with cucumbers as well. I've seen cucumber molds that make them into birds and faces and all sorts of weird, strange things.
I went to the farm this week to get me some corn and some tomato.
Yeah.
And this man is 79 years old, and his wife passed some time ago. And in the summertime, he get busy with this, I don't know how many acre. But he sold 500 dozen of corn.
Yeah.
And there was hours out, too late. He sold them all, and he said, go in the field, get you some what's left over.
That's nice.
And I still find a lot of, you know, smaller corn, and he had those big tomatoes,
yeah,
but not the perfect one because I already sold it. And I left it on my counter, and one day I look at it, and I saw a, what's the name of it?
Well,
it came out of
it. Sprout, a little green sprout came out of your tomato.
No, it was some kind of beast eating
a caterpillar. A caterpillar, yeah. There are some people who get ripe tomatoes, Nicole, that the tomato gets so ripe that the seeds inside sprout and come through the skin of the tomato, which is a pretty weird thing to see. But like you saw, sometimes you have fruit worms that get into a tomato. You don't notice they're in there when you choose a tomato, and of course, then the fruit worm doesn't make you want to eat that tomato anymore.
Oh, I don't mind. I just take a paring knife.
Cut off the bad part and eat the rest, like my mother said. That's what you do. Nicole, it's 6:18. I got to go, but it's great to talk to you again. Keep an eye on the watermelons for us.
Enjoy your day.
Enjoy your day as well. It is 6:18. We'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need.
Many of you have spent hours listening to this song, heard up loud, find out what in the world the lyrics were for this song, because you were convinced they said something nasty in there that your mom and daddy would not let you listen to the radio anymore if they knew what Sam the Sham was saying here. Just couldn't quite get it. Just couldn't quite figure out what in the world they were talking about. Quick weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing. Hit and miss thunderstorms today, high of 91, low of 74. Same pretty much tomorrow, high of 90, low of 73. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. So, Jason, you said, how many calls can I take? As many as I want.
Take us all you want.
Fabulous. And let's go with Jay-Z down in College Park. J.D. in College Park. Hey, Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Walter. How are you, sir?
I'm a fabulous man. How are you?
Oh, great, great, great. You know, talking about watermelons, I'm from Albany, Georgia, you know, right next to Chris
County. Right down there, sure.
Yes, indeed. And back in the day, I was thinking, Walter, there was no such thing when I was a kid as a bad watermelon. I mean, they were all good. And today, when you purchase a watermelon, you have to flip a coin and you have to hope it's a good one. You know, what happened to the good old days, Walter?
Do you have a method of telling which watermelons are ripe in the grocery store, which ones are not? Do you have a way other than flipping the coin?
I do not. I've heard people say, you know, you stomp the darn thing, you know, and I never had much luck with that.
In my experience, there are a couple of ways that sort of make the coin flip on your side more than the other side of being unripe. And the way that I do it is two. Well, first one is if the belly, the white lighter part of it, the part that was on the ground, if it is more yellow than white, then that is getting towards very sweet. The sugars inside the watermelon change the color of the rind. And so if the belly is a little yellower than the other ones, that's going to be the ripest watermelon. And the other one, JD, is I've told people before that you use it by sound, like you say, thumping. and I thumped my forehead like this, and that hard sound on my skull, that's not ripe. And then you thump your chest like this, and that's getting ripe, but not there quite yet. And then you pat your tummy, big fat tummy on the line. Oh, that's a ripe watermelon there. When it sounds like a big fat tummy like me, that's ripe.
Oh, boy. Anyway, well, I'm calling because my fescue lawn is being invaded with the crabgrass.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, should I go ahead and spray the crabgrass and kill it, knowing if I do, thinking if I do, it would just leave a bare spot there. What do you suggest I do, Walter?
Are you talking completely invaded, or are you talking one or two spots, or how much do you have?
Just a few, that's a good question. Just a few spots here and there. It's not completely invaded, yeah.
Why not just dig it out? Why not get a little narrow grubbing hoe or something and just dig it out and not have to spray? Because you're right. If you spray weed killer, Roundup maybe, on the crabgrass, it'll kill the fescue around, so you have a little yellow spot here, there, and here, and there across the lawn. And there's no selective spray that you can use right now to keep crabgrass or to kill crabgrass in fescue. There's nothing selective to take one out and leave the other one alone.
All right.
And, of course, I'm sure you've heard me mention that, or several preach sometimes, that the best way to control crabgrass is with a pre-emergent you put down in March.
That's true, right, yeah.
Maybe another
I failed to do that, but I'll take your advice coming up this winter.
So, I think the it's your choice about whether you want to dig it up and not have the brown spots, or whether it's easier for you to walk around and just squirt, 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 and it squirts the little clumps of crabgrass there. One of the things I did, JD, last, when was it, Thursday? Or, well, it was Wednesday, because I wasn't working on Thursday, but on Wednesday, I put together a web page called Grassy Weeds of Summer, because there are a number of weeds that are in lawns now, grassy weeds. And the way that you can identify them specifically is by their seed heads. And not a lot of people know what the difference between a crabgrass seed head and a Dallas grass seed head, or a goosegrass seed head versus a Bermuda grass seed head. And so I collected all the pictures that I have of grass seed heads and put them on one page called Grassy Weeds of Summer. And in there I said how to control them with crabgrass, of course, the pre-emergent in the spring, or spot spraying like you're doing. And there are other ways of controlling Bahia grass and Dallas grass and the rest of them that you can use. And all this is on my website under Grassy Weeds of Summer. So if someone listening right now wants to know how to control the other grasses and know how to identify them, more importantly, then go to my website and figure it out. All right.
Gotcha. Sounds good.
All right.
Hey,
so today,
thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Wander around your yard and we'll figure out what you're going to do with your crabgrass. Talk to you soon,
there
JD.
You
thanks for calling this morning.
Take care. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Alan in Atlanta, join us on Lawn and Garden. Alan, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Reeves. How you doing?
Good, friend. Alan, what's up?
Good, good. I have a couple of they're very mature crepe myrtles. One of them's actually about 20 feet tall. The other one, I actually cut it back. But neither one of them flower. They get buds on them, but a lot of times never flower.
I will give you one, two, three reasons that I've observed that crepe myrtles don't flower. One is sometimes severe pruning will cause them not to flower. They'll grow great. They'll grow huge amounts of limbs in the spring and summer, but they never flower. So severe pruning will do it. Number two would be over-fertilization, which sort of gives you the same thing. You fertilize in the spring, and sometimes you put some on your lawn, put some on the crepe myrtle, put some more on the lawn, and all of a sudden everybody's got a lot more nitrogen than they need, and so you end up having way too much fertilizer on them. Third one is shade. If it's under a shady place, that's not where a crepe myrtle wants to go and bloom, so that's the third one I can think of. But if it's if it's a healthy-looking plant, Alan, it wants to bloom for reasons sometimes unknown to you and me and other humanity. It just doesn't. And so if it's a healthy-looking plant, just sort of enjoy the leaves and don't worry about the blooms.
Okay. Sounds good. One more question.
I can't. Wait, Alan, I can't do it because I only have 22 seconds right here. So.
I understand. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
It's great talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling.
You too. Bye-bye.
404-872-0750 is my number. Chucky McDonald will be with us in the next half hour. He's got stickers in his centipede, and anybody who has had stickers in their lawns, you know that's a bad thing. You step on them, you say ugly words, and then you realize the children are standing around. You can't say the ugly words But you don't want to step on those things anymore at all. So what do you do about sticker weeds in the centipede? If you have a question about other kinds of weeds that you want to control, including English ivy, kudzu, other grasses, like I mentioned earlier, Bahia grass, Dallas grass, Bermuda grass in zoysia or fescue. If you have a question about any of those, 404-872-0750. I'm Walter Reeves. This is Lawn and Garden. We'll be back after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
6:35 on a Saturday morning, 72 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia gardener, here to help you be more successful and tell you how to not do nearly as much work as your other members of your family might say is important. 404-872-0750 gets you in to ask your garden question this morning. Chuck's down in McDonough and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Chuck, good morning.
Morning, Walter. I've got a problem with spurge in my centipede, and I can find stuff to kill spurge, but yeah. It also kills the centipede.
So it's not spurs. It is spurge.
Yeah, I got rid of the spurs 2 years ago by spraying in February.
Good. All right. Well, for listeners who are all teed up to learn about spurs in your lawn, I'll cover that in just a minute. But Chuck has spurge, S-P-U-R-G-E, spotted mm-hmm. spurge, and there's two or three more that are common in lawns. And spurge is tough, but the good news is it is generally controllable. By pre-emergence first and by post-emergence mm-hmm. second. It is sort of woody. You know how you pull a spurge, you feel sort of stiff, woody-looking stems on it that is sometimes a little bit hard to get it out of the ground. If you find a spot sprayer, a spot spray chemical that can be used in centipede, knowing, as you know, that centipede is a little sensitive to some of the weed killers, so you have to be careful, read the labels, mm-hmm. can be used on centipede, can't be used on centipede. So you get a broadleaf weed killer that can be used on centipede and spray the little spots, the areas in which the spurge is growing. You can do that now. And then next spring, remember to put a pre-emergent down, and particularly one that says it controls spurge and or controls broadleaf weeds, because that's what you want, mm-hmm. not one that just controls crabgrass, that's all. So spurge, both pre-emerge and post-emerge in centipede, you should be able to do it that way.
I'm just having a hard time finding something that I can use on the centipede.
Which ones have you checked? Have you specifically read a label and you didn't find what you needed?
Well, you know, I've been to the garden stores and stuff, and yeah. you know, I can find a lot of stuff that kills spurge, but you can't use it on centipede.
Yeah.
And I actually ordered something online that is supposed to be used for southern grasses uh-huh. to kill spurge, and I did some spot spraying on that just to check. And it killed the spurge, but it also killed the centipede, yeah. which it wasn't supposed
yeah.
to.
Yeah, as I say, you know what, the centipede is pretty sensitive to the stuff. So all I can say, Chuck, is do a lighter maybe application so you don't have quite as much damage to the centipede and let it yellow up and not die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you know what a cobra head is, Chuck?
A
digger thing. There is a brand of garden implement called Cobra Head, and it has a head on it. It looks just like a cobra. It comes very curved over. It has a little head about 2 inches maybe wide, and I have used my Cobra Head for a number of things to sort of grab something in the ground and pull, and because of the hook action of the Cobra Head, it pulls things out of the ground really nicely. I have a long handled one, and so I can just hook things in the ground and pull and jerk it right out of the ground. I wonder if a cobra head weeder, literally a cobra head weeder, might be what would be the easiest thing to pull the spurge out of the ground. Check into it and see. That's just my suggestion there.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You bet, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, have a good day.
So let's talk about sticker weeds in the lawn. By the way, the number again, 404-872-0750. So sticker weed, there are a couple of different kinds of spur weeds, sticker weeds, ugly weed, whatever you want to call it, that grow in Georgia. One is a grass and lives mostly in South Georgia, so I'm not going to talk about it now. But the broadleaf one is not really broadleaf. It doesn't look particularly like a rounded leaf, like a clover, like dandelions or something like that. It's sort of a juniper, of all things, a juniper-looking leaf. So little needles on the ground. They're soft, of course. The leaves of the plant are soft. The sticker part of it comes when it has a flower, and the flower forms a seed head or a seed. And in the seed itself is encased by this about quarter-inch wide, quarter-inch in diameter seed that has stickers all over it, little sharp points all over it. And if you step on it in your bare feet, you will say an ugly thing, or you'll think it. You will, one or the other. You'll think or say something real ugly because it hurts. It's like stepping on briars, like stepping on a sweet gum ball with your bare feet, like stepping on a pine cone with your bare feet. It is not fun at all. So the spurweed is what I call it. So the spurweed can be controlled usually by broadleaf weed killers. Again, this is something that if you time it just right to put a spray on that controls broadleaf weeds and do it earlier rather than later in the year, because the later it goes, the tougher the weed gets. Right now, it's hard to control spurweed, and they've already flowered and made the little seeds, so you're not really gaining anything by spraying now. But if you can put a broadleaf weed killer, like the Bonide Weed Beater Ultra or the Ortho Weed Be Gone products, any one of those will kill it when it's young, when they're little bitty things. And if you have the spurs now, you're going to have the little bitty things. But put it out, let's see, put the spray out in mid-April of next year when they just have started germinating, and maybe a second spray. I do that sometime in late May. And that should control spurweed completely. As long as you kill all the plants that are blooming before they make their seeds, then that should kill the spurweed just fine. And again, if you have it now, sad to say, nothing you can do but put on your calendar, put out a broadleaf weed killer April, May of next year. Let's go to the phones. We got Hal in Ackworth. Join us on the Lawn and Garden Show. Hal, good morning.
Good morning, Walter.
What you got, Hal?
Well, I've got something in my Bermuda grass. It looks like crabgrass on steroids, and the Pike people talked to Mickey about it, and she said she thought it was goosegrass, I think is what she said.
All right.
But what do I do about it?
Have you allowed it to go to seed just to see what the seeds look like?
I have not. I've cut it whenever I could. Yeah. But I put pre-emergent on it this year, and that seems to be the only weed that I have.
Yeah.
But boy, it's vigorous stuff.
Goosegrass germinates at about 110%. Every seed that it has germinates two instead. It is, the way to identify it is a couple of ways, Hal. One is by the seed head. The seed head looks the, it'll have five seed, I think there's a technical name for this, but there are five arms, let's say, of seeds along it, and it looks like a goose's foot. When you see the seed head, it looks like a goose's foot. The other thing is that it opens up in the middle, and the middle of the goosegrass plant will be white, and it's unlike most other plants.
Like.
Yeah, the white stuff in the middle is also a very easy way to say, oh, yeah, this is goosegrass.
That's what it is.
All right. It is fortunately an annual grass, which means, yeah, a pre-emergent should control it. If you haven't gotten good control, if you have a lot of it, like you say you have now, two applications, according to the label, I think usually you can put one application out in March and another one in late April, early May, to make sure you always have the pre-emergent chemical dissolved and active and ready to go on the surface of your soil. And that should do most of the control that you need next year, of course.
What do I do to kill it now?
Well, you're like JD. I talked to JD a minute ago. All you got is either pulling it up or spot spraying and making little brown holes in your Bermuda grass. That's about it. Nothing will kill it right now. We used to have, in the olden, golden years, Hal, back when I was a pup, we had a product called MSMA, monomethane sodium arsenate. And MSMA was death on a cracker on all the annual grasses in the lawn. You kill crabgrass, you kill goosegrass. Did a pretty good job of Dallas grass and Bahia grass. But it was taken off the market because it had arsenic in it, and certainly we understand why it was taken off the market. But MSMA was a fabulous post-emergent weed killer for grassy weeds. We just don't have that available anymore.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Have a good day.
Thanks for no answer for you there, Al. Next year, though, two applications of pre-emergent, one in March, one in late April. I think you'll be fine.
Okay. Thanks, Walter.
You bet. 404-872-0750 is my number. So just now you heard me say what goosegrass seed heads look like. Five little arms with seeds along them. Looks like a goose's foot. Dallas grass, what does it look like? Is a straight stem. Two seed arms go to one side and one to the other side. It looks like a flag. And so I remember that Dallas and Texas are, you know, quite proud of their state. They have the Texas state flag. And so I remember if it has a flag-shaped seed head, then it is Dallas grass. What does Bermuda grass look like? Bermuda grass in a fescue lawn or some other lawn where you don't want it to grow has a seed head that looks like an umbrella that's been blown up by the wind. You know, when your umbrella turns inside out and the ribs of the umbrella stick out like they're not supposed to, that is what Bermuda grass seed head looks like. What does Bahia grass look like? It looks like a V. Again, two arms sticking up in the air and a big V-shaped and little black seeds. Looks like ants, really, on the sides of each of those two arms. That V-shape, it reminds me, it looks like a V, so that rhymes with B, so it's Bahia grass or Bahia grass, some call it. So that's how I identify grassy weeds. Again, I got a webpage freshly minted on my website, Grassy Weeds of Summer. Bob is out in Johns Creek and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, Bob. What's up?
I planted a maple tree that I got at Pike's about 22 years ago, and it always came out. And this year, the leaves are about half out.
Ooh.
And somebody said it's probably root rot, and I didn't know what I could do.
Well, 21 years ago, or maybe 22, you could have fixed that, Bob. But now... Yeah. Well, I guess they might have been saying it was girdled or had some kind of girdling action. Is that what they were referring to when they said root bound?
They didn't say exactly, but it's just, you know, the leaves are about half the size of normal.
Has it done that before, or have you noticed it before?
No, this is the first year, and it hasn't, you know, it hasn't filled out like it should.
If it were a girdling root at the base of the tree, you would have seen it at least 15 years ago. The tree just wouldn't have prospered 2 or 3 years after you planted it. You just see the leaves never really came out like they should, because girdling roots are literally that. They're a root that circles around the base of the tree and suffocates it. And so if it can't get the water and stuff it needs for the leaves, they're small. But you would have seen that long ago, not just suddenly this year, 2019. So what can you do? We'll investigate a couple of things, but yeah, is there any chance there's a drought or anything else that, environmentally, that would cause the leaves to be small?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I have bushes around it.
They all look good.
But
and no weed killer or something like that sprayed on the roots?
No, I've never fertilized it. I don't know if that would help.
Not usually. Is it in near a lawn or something that gets fertilized regularly?
Yeah. Yeah, it's in a little area surrounded. I've got edging around it.
Yeah. If it gets fertilized, the roots, of course, are way beyond the spread of the tree. And if it goes into a fertilized lawn or something like that, it has plenty of nutrients. It doesn't need anything from you. I think, Bob, this is going to have to go in the category of we don't know quite yet, but Bob is going to go out today and look very closely on the trunk of the tree and see if you see any wounding, any invasion of borers, any look at the ground too and pull the mulch back from the base of the trunk and see if you see any roots there that are circling around close to the trunk of the tree. Possibly there's something girdling going on. I don't think so, but just check and see. But those are anything that will interrupt the flow of nutrients and moisture up to the leaves. That will cause the leaves to be small. I just don't expect it to be showing up 20 years after you planted it. But do that homework, Bob. If you find something interesting, call me back and we'll talk about it. It's 6:48. We'll be back to Lawn and Garden after this.
This is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News on WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be here Monday morning, 4:30 till 9, for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves.
Continuing the theme of songs that we listened to for hours trying to find out what were the lyrics and convince again that our parents would not let us listen to rock and roll ever, ever, ever if they knew what Willy Bully and what Louie Louie were about. Conclusions are that they weren't saying much of anything other than they were drunk when they were singing the songs. A full weekend, I should say, that's some good of the weekend forecast. Go to quick weekend forecast. Brought to you by Finley Roofing. And hit and miss thunderstorms today, high of 91, low of 74. Pretty much the same tomorrow. Hit and miss thunderstorms, high of 90, low of 73. It was not cool yesterday. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Sherry is out in Woodstock and joins us. Hey, Sherry, good morning.
Good morning, Walter.
What do you have?
Well, I can't find an answer to this question on my staghorn fern. It gets covered with this white powder, and I'm not sure if it's just dust or if it's an insect. And my mother has staghorns, and she says hers gets covered with that, too, so I thought I'd ask you.
Is it outside, inside, where you keep it? Where do you keep it?
It's outside on the porch.
Okay. I don't see why not. I've never seen a staghorn fern with a disease called powdery mildew. But you're describing what powdery mildew looks like, and I know that there are lots of plants with powdery mildew on them now. Crape myrtles, dogwoods, phlox. What else have I seen them on? Monarda. There's a whole line of plants in this time, this part of the year that get powdery mildew. Fortunately, this is a good thing, Sherry, maybe, is that the powdery mildew fungus that infects, let's say, a dogwood does not infect your staghorn fern, nor the one that infects crepe myrtles. So they infect the dogwoods or the staghorn fern. There's a specific fungi that makes powdery mildew, if indeed that is what you have. The usual way of controlling powdery mildew, or preventing it really, is to use oil like neem oil on the plant. But I don't know if neem oil is going to hurt your fern or not. That's certainly not your goal, to kill the mildew and hurt the fern as well. You don't want to do that. So at this point, that's what I would do. I don't have a way to look up right now what, if there is a powdery mildew that gets on staghorn ferns, but you could look it up at home and see if there is and if there's anybody who has a solution for that. But that's the first thing I would think of, simply because there's so many other plants that have it. This is the right time of year for powdery mildew to attack a plant.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can do that.
How big is your staghorn fern, Sherry?
Oh, it's about 3 feet wide.
When did you get it?
And I've had it for a couple of years now.
Nice. And how do you keep it?
And this really isn't new. It kind of comes and goes. I've wiped it off before.
Yeah.
Made the leaves all, you know, nice and green and shiny.
Yeah, right. And where do you keep it in the wintertime?
I keep it inside, and I keep it near a window.
Of course.
So far, it's doing okay. I sometimes put a grow light on it for a little while.
Bathroom, and the skylight in the bathroom seems to be a great place for a staghorn fern. If you don't have a skylight, you don't have a window much to your bathroom, it doesn't work quite so well, but that's what they like. Indoors, nice light, nice moisture in the wintertime, and then the summer to be outside, and you have huge ones, easily 3 feet long, high, tall, and a couple of feet wide, and enormous plants. Well, let's find out if you have the powdery mildew or not. Do the research on that, Cherry, and we'll see if it does. And either use oil, or you may just have to go back and do what you've been doing, which is wiping it off and make the leaves shiny rather than sort of fuzzy like they're supposed to be. Stan is in Marietta and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Stan, good morning.
Good morning, Walter.
Yes, sir.
About a month and a half, or maybe even 2 months ago, I noticed some small stems with tiny leaves coming up in my lawn.
Yeah.
And I asked my lawn service guy what they were, because I saw them after he was here. And he looked at them and said they were, I have trees in my yard. And he said they were coming from the trees. They were the nuts that had germinated. And we do have a lot of nuts and a lot of squirrels and stuff.
Or could they have come from the roots of the tree? Is that a possibility either?
No, these are real tiny, tiny things.
Okay.
He said there's nothing he could put on them because it would kill the grass, but all I had to do was continue to mow them. And since I'm cutting the leaves off, it wouldn't give it, you know, any... And they would die. Well, it's been about a month, at least a month and a half, and they're not dying. They're coming up. I know he was right, because when I first saw them, and it was wet outside, I was able to get two or three of them. I was able to actually pull them up.
Yeah.
And I saw the nut. These things are indeed coming out of a nut.
Show me. I want to see that nut. That's what I want to see. Because have you sent me the pictures for the leaves on my website, Stan?
I have not.
I know someone has, and I saw it, and I thought, what is this coming up in their lawn? I didn't know what it was. But if you have a nut that's coming from Stan, I would really appreciate it. If you go to my website, at the bottom corner, it says Contact Walter. So hit that button, and you just open up an email form, and then you can upload pictures to me. I would love to see the pictures of that nut, because that would solve your problem and the person that sent the pictures to me originally. We'll figure out what this thing is that's germinating in your lawn. It's 6:58. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after news.